Hey guys, on this episode of EdTech, we're going to be talking with Scott Tyner, Ernie Bailey, and Rob Raspberry. We're going to be covering things such as security, best security practices, multi-factor authentication, and the tariffs coming from China. All this and more on EdTech.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is EdTech, episode 74. Let's start with security.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Peerless AV, driving technology through innovation.
This is EdTech, the monthly higher ed tech podcast. I'm your host, Bill O'Donnell, and this month I'm joined by Mr. Scott Tyner. How are you, sir?
Hey, Bill. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Of course. Mr. Ernie Bailey.
Glad to be back.
How are you, sir? And of course, Mr. Rob Raspberry, how are you, sir?
Greetings, salutations. Always good to reconvene with you guys.
Aww. So first and foremost, for most of us, we're in the time of graduation and it's us and the church mice and, oh yeah, the summer classes. Not all of us. Mr. Raspberry, I believe you guys work in quarters and not quite semesters, so it's a little difference there, but that aside, that does not stop up the progress of probably tech refreshes and various upgrades and updates. I will at least say on my end, at our school, we just recently bought a 53,000 square foot office building from Hire, and which will be interesting. And already the Board of Trustees said, hey, there's still some stuff in the boardroom. Can we use that for our meeting in 2 weeks? I'm like, sure, okay. And, you know, the next couple of days are going to be me and a fox and hound because we're pretty sure the integrators buried an amp up in the ceiling. So, you know, that's always fun. Mr. Raspberry, how about yourself? What funness do you guys have going on?
So we are in the process of getting a full scope and an upgrade to one of our major auditoriums. And so we, you know, put out, have a consultant that's, you know, designing some things for us, and we're bringing in integrators, and we have some buy-in from a couple different departments and our classroom renovations, committee, which is awesome. So this is an auditorium. It's 200-300, you know, pretty big auditorium. So we're looking to do that over the summer. And so we're in the process of putting bids out and getting that done. That's really the biggest thing that we're working on.
Now, did anyone throw you guys a curve in terms of like, oh, we want to be able to do wireless collaboration for all of the people that are in the auditorium? That haven't popped up?
No, not yet. Not yet, but I'm sure it will. But I think we'll be ready for it. I think we're sort of anticipating that kind of thing. So
that's fair. Mr. Ernie Bailey, hey Ernie,
yeah.
What's on your agenda for the week, for the summer?
We're doing a lot of administrative spaces right now that have been thrown out at us. We're also looking at either replacing or changing our audience response system. Mm. And we're going from, you know, proprietary clickers, mm-hmm. It's all checked out, to doing everything over Wi-Fi or cellular data. And we've run into this issue before in that some of our rooms, the networking is not robust enough. The wireless is not robust enough. And we're underground or inside a hill on several of the rooms. That makes cellular difficult to get in and out. So we're playing with, you know, have we beefed up stuff enough to make this work? Because I can say this is what we're going to do.
Now, are you guys using, like, say, Poll Everywhere, or is it more?
We're looking at Poll Everywhere. We've been using Turning Point for many years. Yeah. We don't know which way we're going to go. I do know several of the engineers at Poll Everywhere came from Turning Point. So I don't think our faculty will see a major change, mm-hmm. in what integrates with PowerPoint and stuff like that, but I've got a couple of my guys looking at it, and they're working with several of our summer programs, mm-hmm. To run tests on both programs, see how they work.
Yeah. That was one of the things. Just the other day, there was a little bit of an active learning symposium over at Rutgers, and they were doing a kind of cross-pollination with things. And it was kind of interesting. They had some folks that were that had come all the way down from, if I remember right, there was Yeshiva University. There was obviously us from William Patterson. And there were one or two folks, I believe, that were from Rowan. And it was just kind of basic crisscross talk or anything. The biggest one they had talked about was the usage of clickers and the fact that, you know, Turning Point themselves have said, hey, hardware-wise, we're, you know, going to a cloud-based solution. And it's one of those things of, okay, how do we get our students on board with all this stuff? I know it's not the most riveting of tech, but at the same time, it does affect, for us, it affects what kind of requirements do we need for the room, specifically, you know, is like, you know, in Ernie's case, is the Wi-Fi strong? Is there enough Wi-Fi access in the rooms and everything? I mean, you know, case in point.
Carrying 5 to 6 devices when they walk in. That's right.
Yeah.
So, 300-seat auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. No, at Rutgers, they had a 250 to 300-seat auditorium. And, you know, me being the curious one that I am, looked up and saw about 6 or 7 Wi-Fi access points. And I went, okay, that's because everyone's on, you know, on their mobile devices. I get this. Strangely enough, no power outlets, but plenty of Wi-Fi. So, you know, everyone's running out of there with their batteries half dead, but that's besides the point. Mr. Tyner, how about yourself? What's the fun summer project for you guys?
Yeah, we are graduating this weekend. And so Tuesday is always one of my happiest days of the year to walk on campus, and it's quiet because there's nobody around.
Oh, you get your favorite parking spot back?
You get, the only parking spot back. That's none during the regular school year. But then we're gonna dive right into it. We're doing 2 full classroom buildings over the summer, bringing them all up to digital, and then several small projects. And I'm sure we all see the people who pop up right about now and say, "I've got some money left over before the end of the year. Let's do something."
Yeah.
And so there's that. So we're gonna be in it Wednesday of next week. We're gonna dive right in and get going.
Oh, yeah. The other fun one that popped up on us was we had 2 divisible rooms that suddenly the student center said, "Oh, we have money to do all this." And we're like, "Okay, cool." And then it turned into, "Well, we want, you know, you guys said that the lumens were only like 4,000. We found this one that we really like, and it's 8,000. I went, "Oh, okay. That's very nice. Let's take a check." And first and foremost, that puts you over the bid limit. And secondly, are they, you know, at that point, I'm like, all right, if you really want to go high end, why don't we just go laser so I don't have to ever go in these rooms again? And no, they weren't. They're actually dual lamp projectors. And I'm going, that's actually more painful in the long run. But
yes.
It's one of those things. We eventually found a middle ground, and we also managed to find a couple of solstice pods to throw in so they can now do wireless collaboration. So everyone wins, everyone's happy. And aside from that, I think there's a new dorm going up, and we have minimal involvement with that, but, you know, I still have to go and hold the GC's feet to the fire. So,
right. Yeah.
Anyways. Coming up first on our article list here, this comes to us from Commercial Integrator. This covers the upcoming tariffs that the current administration has put in place with China, as well as the fact that China is putting tariffs on, you know, our stuff. The big thing that's coming through is that most of this, the prices are going to be going up on parts. Now, whether or not, you know, you look and go and say, you know, in my backyard, there's Aurora Multimedia. Now, do they make all their stuff in Morganville and everything? Oh, I'm sure they assemble most of it, but, you know, you're still their component parts. Your resistors, your certain circuit boards, your chipsets, and things like that, they're still coming from China. So there's probably going to be a price jump. I believe Crestron had already put out a notice that their prices are going up, along with, you know, a couple other folks. It's just the nature of the beast. Now, some other companies have kind of, you know, gone about this in which they said, "Oh, here, those tariffs, our stuff, you know, like, for example, AMX. I don't think AMX prices are going to be fluctuating that much, mostly because if you actually look at their labels, certain things such as their touch panels and other components and everything. And on the back, it will say made in Mexico. And, you know, obviously there's no major tariff on Mexico, along with the fact that there was a new trade agreement just made. So, it's one of those things, guys, that, you know, down the line, do you think this is going to affect us, or is this one of those just, we kind of look and go, well, it's the cost of doing business.
Well,
it's going to be the cost of doing business.
It's going to be the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not going to have a choice. This is something way out of our control, but okay. It's going to affect us.
The thing that always that hits me, and you have to think about, is, I mean, 25% is a significant number. This is not 2% or 3%. I mean, 25%. Companies, they just can't eat that. A few of them might have said it 2 or 3% or even 5%. Listen, we're going to eat this until this war is over and there's an agreement. 25% is a ton of money. And if you're thinking in some of the work we do, we may be spending, you know, $500,000 to $1 million over the course of a year, whatever, that adds up really quick in our budgets. And it's something that I've been paying attention to on the periphery, but as it gets closer and closer, I think we all have to be paying a lot more attention to, because it affects what we do.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, at the thing that we kind of look about it, at least with our department, we're saying, listen, we want to do all this stuff, but due to budgetary reasons, you know, it's like, hey, we wanted to do, on average, we usually do about 5 to 6 classrooms or so over the summer, but some of them are, you know, are far more intensive than others. You know, cause there'll be like dual screen rooms, and we'll also end up replacing the screens and things like that. And it'll just turn into, well, we're just gonna have to do less. And it's not us being lazy or anything. It's literally just, you know, it's the cost. So it's one of those things where, I see this is going to probably cause us to have a little bit of a slowdown on things, but, you know, if folks really want the stuff so bad, you know, go, please go plead to, you know, your folks who do, capital plans or, you know, construction management or what have you. You know, one of the funny things I was talking about with the folks at Rutgers, you know, they were more than happy to go and update some stuff once a new building was up, because, you know, the School of Engineering said, oh, we want these classrooms. Oh yeah, we want tech. Oh, we never thought about that. And, you know, they try to go through and make sure everything is very thorough, because the moment capital plan says, okay, we're done, that's it. There's no, you know, if you suddenly forgot a card or forgot a display, that's going to be coming out of their budget. And, you know.
Or as you said, Bill, if you're building a new residence hall over the summer, I mean, they're going to see costs in building that residence hall increase. And so does that mean, if we're doing this with an academic building, that suddenly the tech budget starts getting cut because the cost of steel has gone up 25%, and they have that budget somewhere?
It's one of those things where, and guys, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but usually the time whenever we see like a school suddenly has a budgetary issue, 9 times out of 10, it's usually like I'm the first on the cutting block. Of all of a sudden, oh, Bill, remember how we said we were going to do this? Yeah, we just took $30,000 out of your budget. Oh. Thanks. Do I no longer have displays and mounts in the following rooms? Yeah. Okay, cool. Can we like hang some postcards or posters to, because we already put the back boxes in? And not saying that it happened, and, you know, the VP of finance may have seen that anyway.
It's sort of interesting, because I'm sort of wondering, you know, after the length of the Trump administration, you know, how long is this going to be instituted for? And certainly it's going to impact us for the next few years. I'm just wondering, is this something that's going to continue long after, you know, Trump is out of office? Is this something that we as a country are going to implement going forward? But I mean, it's always something every year is going to cause some type of rise in cost. And, you know, this, right, this affects just about every bit of infrastructure that we have. So everybody's got to, you know, sort of roll with the punch, so to speak.
Yeah, and like Scott said, you know, 2 or 3% we could probably deal with, but 25% increase, I mean, we're going to start cutting features that we were putting in these rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just we're going to not upgrade as many. The few that we do get to upgrade are not going to be where we want them to be, and they're not going to match the ones that we did last year.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's going to be sort of a not a degradation, but they'll certainly be. Oh well, this one had all the bells and whistles. This one's a little bit more straightforward. It's not going to be bad. Simply, like sometimes I put it, like, you know, in some cases it's like, oh, you want to have like a complete Crestron DM system or an NVX system in here, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, congrats, we only had money for a Valens extender. Okay, you know, does it get the job done? Yes. Is it the nicest, and, you know, we have all the options we want for later on? No, but that's what we're given. So, next up after this, this comes to us off of Rave Pubs. It is from our own Mr. Scott Tyner, entitled "Security Start from the Beginning." Now, this is one that I read through and. Coming from the Department of Defense kind of thing, this is one of those things I read through and I went, you know, Scott had actually hit up on the other end of things, because for us, it was always everything had to be encrypted, everything was secure, everything, you couldn't mess with the stuff to the degree of, if you ever look at, say, Crestron or Extron or anything, or any of the, you know, the big players, they literally have boxes that are specifically designed for the federal government. And it's because, you know, they have to have things hardened. Now, on the other end, for us, because we're in higher ed, and, you know, what national secrets are getting told here? I mean, the only person who has an exception of that is Ernie, and that is because, you know, the wonderful world of HIPAA compliance and PIIs. But I could go on about this for a while. Scott, you want to help guide us through going through and starting things off from the beginning?
Yeah. So for me, we're reading more and more in social media and in the trade publications about security in AV. And one of the things I think we tend to do in security in general is panic when we read something, kind of freak out when we read something. And we've gone through this process at Bates. And I do think you're exactly right, Bill. We're higher ed, so we're different than Department of Defense, where we can't do everything. We can't lock everything down because we have people that need to use the equipment in different ways. So for me, it's sitting there to say, really simple, okay, what's the actual threat? What is the effect of the threat? And we kind of looked at it either in money or in reputation. And then what is the likelihood of that happening? And so as you look through that, you really start to find some holes, but then you can look at some of the stuff you read and think, well, okay, that's not the biggest threat we need to worry about right now. And it also, as importantly, gives you this kind of baseline to go back to when this new threat comes out and everybody's scared of it. Okay, let's go back to our risk assessment, put this through the risk assessment and think about how we need to react.
Oh yeah. The big thing that I've at least seen, like, you know, obviously folks now have on campus usually tend to have at least one security person. Sometimes it's a whole department or so, depending on how big the school is and everything. And I get it. They want to make sure that everything, it's one of those, you know, like you said, it's the, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Okay, well, what exactly got breached? And more importantly, when you clamp certain things down, how does that affect us? Now, the big one that we ended up having was, and this is common practice for a number of places, is, you know, just having basic port security. So, you know, if you just randomly plug something in, if it doesn't recognize it, and your system, your network security stuff doesn't recognize the MAC address or feels that something was too random, it'll lock the port out. Now, the thing that came with us was, we actually have our own separate VLAN for all the Crestron devices and all the AV devices. It just makes life easier for us. It's isolated. We don't have to worry about anything. They swore that they didn't put port security on. And then at one point we just decided right before, I swear, this is one of those ones where you're just looking, you're like, really? But we went and added in an extra touch panel in the back of a projection room. Because the broadcast folks were running things, so we're like, oh, here, we'll make it so you guys can actually control stuff in the back here. You don't have to worry about the client doing anything. The moment we plugged that in, it went into a 12-port switch. All of a sudden, just everything else shut down. Why? Because the trunk line suddenly got shut down because the thing went, oh, what is this? I don't know what this is. And yeah, it involved a lot of cursing, crying, and screaming. And then finally the network folks got packed to us. But go on. I can see you already.
Oh, yeah. What I was going to say is also, and it varies from institution to institution as well. I mean, so if you have an institution that has a lot of research, grants, money, government, you know, collaboration, stuff like that, that becomes, you know, more of a concern. But you're right. I mean, there's all different levels of security. And we used to, you know, now we have the CISOs in almost every large IT department.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I'm thinking, when I listen to what Bill said, the thing that strikes me is that exact piece. So you're putting the security on the ports, et cetera, et cetera. So, and you may, everybody's a different case, and this is why you have to do it. I think you're right, Rob. There are research universities that have grants and like, but so you're putting these port security on. Okay, right. What are you protecting? Here at Bates, for example, it's very unlikely that some random person off the street is going to come into one of our buildings and randomly plug into one of these ports and get anything. The likelihood of that is extremely low. So on our scale, that's not a priority for us to take a look at.
Yeah. It's a bit of a boulder to kill an ant kind of thing. It's now the one thing that eventually this is a network integration thing. For us at least, we're now starting to do more kind of user or allow list and deny list. And that is specifically for us, it's going to be, oh, I log in with my credentials. Oh, okay. I can actually access the Crestron VLAN from whatever laptop I go into, provided, you know, you open up the correct ports and everything. But it's one of those things we're trying to make it where it's more user login access. Now, the other end, and I'll ask all you guys this, we'll start with Ernie first and then kind of work it way down. This is something that we've implemented here, and I'm kind of curious as to how folks are following through with it, and that is multi-factor authentication. Now, how that relates back to AV is, do I think that we need to have multi-factor authentication for AV? No, but I've also been in a realm where I had to put in my ID card in order to use a touch panel. So, you know, I'm not the normal for the litmus test, but Ernie, we'll start with you guys, because once again, I'm thinking about this in terms of who's actually using multi-factor and who's not.
Well, we're using multi-factor authentication for some things. If you're going to be able to, you know, if you want to get towards any of the patient information or anything like that, that is very, very secure. We're not using it, excuse me, on our AV side right now, but we do log into the same network, of course. But like you said, you know, using the network protocols, if I log in, I have my access no matter what machine I'm logged into. So I get to whatever I need to, my engineers can, and everything else.
You're saying a highly prestigious medical school is a lot more put together than William Patterson? I'm shocked. Shocked, really, I am.
I mean, we have a chief officer in IT.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's got a very good team, and they work, they watch everything. And, you know, if you get warnings that, you know, there may be a vulnerability and maybe some of the Crestron gear that's coming in, we pay attention to that. We work with our network security people, and we work with Crestron to make sure that, you know, we get whatever patches we need. Mm-hmm. So we're not a gateway into the campus. Someone find a, you know, back road, if you will, the patient information through our stuff. We don't think they can, but we have people that watch it for us. So.
Fair enough. Rob, do you guys tend to use multi-factor, or is that one of those, one day you're just going to find a little token on your desk?
Yeah, well, so, you know, we're using it with like Office 365 and login and some of that. So we use it on that. As far as on the AV side, no. So it's more, you know, a general application situation. So every once in a while you log into your Outlook and it says, hey, you know, send you a text, do this, that. So, you know, it is on campus. As far as AV stuff goes, no, we don't use it at this point.
Now, at most for us, like our programmer Damon will use administrative passwords and things like that. Eventually, one of the things we probably will end up doing, and this is how this ties back with everyone, is that we're looking right now. We have GVE or Global Viewer Enterprise, and eventually we want to make it to where the folks who actually use that to monitor the system or monitor the classrooms, it'll go, okay, here's leveled access. Here's your password for just, the kind folks working the help desk. They can view things. They can maybe open up the touch panel or the X panel for the room. But other than that, they can't reset lamp hours. They can't do this. They can't do that. It's really more of just more observe and report. And as I say, finally, I'm going to bring this back to Scott. Obviously, since you've been going over this, I'm sure there are certain things. And once again, I think it's a general consensus. To do multi-factor authentication for AV, I don't – like most of us tend to keep things in a hardened or in a VLAN that's already hard enough to access as it is. But I still want your opinion on this one.
Yeah, we're in the process right now. We started in January of implementing two-factor across campus. So we're in the process of doing the faculty right now. We don't use it on any of our AV systems, but what we do is put our passwords in a password manager safe. So mm-hmm. Let's say LastPass, and then essentially we have it make up our password. So in a way, nobody actually knows what our passwords are. They're just in that password safe, and you can change them anytime, and you log in and they're in the safe. So you can just log in. So that keeps us fairly safe with our AV stuff.
Oh, fair enough. The only last little bit I'll ask everyone, and this is just my own morbid curiosity. For us, we've been using Duo. I know some other folks have been using, like, say, Google Authenticate. There's even the fine folks. I know at a couple of campuses, they still use they have the RSA little digital, literally it's a physical token. And I know for them, the only reason they're using that, for the most part, they were using Duo, but the physical tokens were because as I would put it, some of their faculty are a little bit more seasoned than most. And it's, these are also the same folks who may come on campus with a Windows XP laptop that's like missing a K button. And yeah, not that I'm describing a person to a T at all. Not one bit. And they specifically asked for a token. And, we begrudgingly were like, okay, because it turns out they didn't have a smartphone either. But once again, that's faculty. They have their PhD. Most of us have a bachelor's, possibly a master's, like Mr. Tyner. And but it's all how they're doing. Mostly because, once again, I've said it before, and I will say it 1,000 times over. Folks come to our schools because of the faculty. They don't come by and say, "Oh, this screen is 4K." Okay, maybe in Ernie's case, but that's because it's medical, and that size of resolution determines whether or not I have cancer or not. But still, it's just one of those things. It's our faculty. It's who we have to work with. So, all right. Well, that's about all the time we have, gentlemen. Where can the fine folks find you aside from Infocom, Mr. Tyner?
You can find me either on LinkedIn or on Twitter at S Tyner.
All right, fair enough. Mr. Ernie Bailey, where can the fine folks find you at?
You can find me on LinkedIn.
All right. And Mr. Rosberry, of course, where can we find you at, aside from on Drexel?
What Ernie said, LinkedIn.
There you go. All right. Aside from that, guys, obviously we will hope to see you guys at Infocom. I unfortunately will not be there, but you can certainly find Rob as well as Ernie, and those two usually find some good hidden gems. Once again, this is EdTech, part of the AV Nation podcast family. This is EdTech.